Chapter 33, Did a Flood Destroy the Dinosaurs?
Oh boy, there's nothing like the beach. The sand in your toes and the heat on your back. It's like paradise with a bucket of fun. Teenagers are playing, kids are laughing, and adults are splashing each other while running around. It just couldn't get any better than this. You let out a big sigh and sit down on your beach towel awaiting a wonderful day. But little did you or anyone else that day realize that your beach blanket paradise was about to turn into a horrible nightmare. First, the waves began to get a little choppy as the wind all of a sudden became brisk. It continued to not only pick up speed but pick up people's umbrellas and blow them away. Ominous clouds moved in at breakneck speed as people began to flee out of the rising water. Everyone scrambled and laughter turned to screams as now the rain began to pour. First in sheets, then in buckets. Just when you thought you'd be flung away into oblivion, as fast as it arrived, it suddenly stopped.
Was that it?
Was it over?
Unfortunately, no. Like a horrible game of cat and mouse, this watery monster was just playing with you. You were simply pausing to look in its eye before it was about to swat you to death. Bang!
Just like the turning on and off of a light switch, this flurry of water from above and below turned right back on with an incredible force. Waves of unbelievable size now pounded the shores, obliterating anything in their path. The wind became so fierce that it drove splinters of palm branches straight through trees. Signs first swayed, then buckled, then blew away. Roofs were blown off, power lines were snapping, cars were floating, as people huddled in flooding homes shrieking in utter terror. Of course, I'm talking about the fearful force of a hurricane.
Now folks, how many of you like to fly a kite during a hurricane? Yeah, most of us wouldn't even dream of going outside during a hurricane, let alone fly a kite, right? And the reason is obvious. Hello, they're pretty scary, aren't they? Slightly. And yet, here's the irony. Most people today are totally fearful of going through a giant hurricane, but they have absolutely no fear of their one and only giant God. Why? Because there is no fear of God before their eyes. And that means they're in a heap of trouble. Therefore, in order to help these arrogant people hopefully become more humble people, we're going to continue in our study, The Witness of Creation. And what we've been doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe, before it's too late. And so far we've seen the first evidence God left behind for us, showing us this amazing truth, is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And then we saw the second evidence was the evidence of a young creation. And then we saw the third evidence was the evidence of a special creation. And then we saw the fourth evidence was the evidence of a judged creation. And then the last two times we saw the fifth evidence was the evidence of a fearful creation. And last time we saw, contrary to the lie of evolution, that man did indeed coexist with the dinosaurs, just like the Bible said. And we know that to be true because evolution is not without mistakes, dinosaurs did not eat meat, and creation is not without proof. Gee, you'd think if man really did coexist with dinosaurs, we'd find some proof. Well, shocker. Our footprints with man walking with dinosaurs right alongside good enough for you. Hello. Evolution is wrong. The Bible is right. How much more proof do we need? But that's not all. Once again, God's very merciful to us. He just keeps answering our skeptical questions even when He doesn't have to. The third question concerning dinosaurs is, did a flood really destroy the dinosaurs? I certainly think so. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 7:17-22. For 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth, and as the waters increased they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the earth, and all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished: birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind. Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died.
Now folks, according to our text, we can clearly see that there was not only a worldwide flood that covered even the tops of mountains, but in doing so it did what? It destroyed every living earthbound thing that was below those mountains, didn't it? Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in it died. And so common sense tells us this would naturally include the dinosaurs, right? And yet once again, evolution devilishly comes along and tries to get us to believe in something else other than the Word of God. First of all, the evolutionists would point to the mysterious sudden death of the dinosaurs as a major proof of their evolutionary theory. However, if you stop and think about it, the sudden death of the dinosaurs has nothing to do with evolution, let alone prove it. Rather, all it shows is that the dinosaurs died a sudden death. There's no evolving of creatures here. They just died. They didn't change into anything. They died. How does that prove evolution? Answer? It doesn't. Actually, what we're going to see is that their sudden death proves that the Bible is true. But to make matters worse, the death of the dinosaurs is not only used over and over again to supposedly support the lie of evolution when it doesn't, but they've actually come up with all different kinds of theories to try to explain the sudden disappearance of dinosaurs to further help support this lie. And the first theory evolutionists say caused the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs is the asteroid theory. This theory is probably one of the most common ones that evolutionists have come up with, and it basically says that millions of years ago a giant asteroid several miles wide struck the Earth, causing devastating effects. They say it left a huge layer of dust in the atmosphere that blocked out the sun's light for months or even years, causing a type of nuclear winter, which in turn supposedly dropped the Earth's temperature and destroyed the plants, causing the dinosaurs to die out not only from the massive explosion but from massive starvation. And that sounds all neat and dandy, but let's take a look at this theory and see if it really completely fits the evidence of the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs. First of all, if this giant asteroid really struck the Earth and killed off all the dinosaurs, then why didn't it kill off all the other life forms as well? Why just the dinosaurs? Why didn't it kill off the birds, small vertebrates, including mammals, big crocodiles, insects, flowering plants, freshwater plants and animals, various types of sea life, etc.? In fact, we know that certain light-sensitive species did survive. Why did these life forms survive yet the dinosaurs didn't, if this theory is true? Did this giant meteorite have a personal vendetta wholly against dinosaurs, or is this theory just wholly wrong? I think the answer is obvious. But that's just the first of many holes with this theory. Evolutionists will also point to the existence of a certain metal called iridium as supposed proof of this supposed asteroid impact. And that's because asteroids do seem to contain this type of metal in them, and thus they say the impact really did happen. However, it just so happens that the Earth's core contains this metal, iridium, as well. And it also just so happens that this metal can be dispersed during volcanic eruptions. You don't need a giant asteroid impact and explosion to produce it. It's already here. And as we saw before, during the worldwide global flood, there would have been a worldwide global upheaval, including lots and lots of volcanoes going off. No, the existence of iridium does not prove this asteroid theory of evolution for the disappearance of the dinosaurs. It actually supports the biblical account of a worldwide flood. Gee, go figure. But that's still not all. Evolutionists will also point to the existence of a supposed crater called the Chicxulub crater on the Yucatan Peninsula in southeast Mexico as supposed proof of this asteroid theory. But the problem is, what they don't tell you is that the drill cores of this supposed crater don't even support the idea that this really is an impact crater in the first place. As one researcher pointed out,
"I was not totally surprised to find that here again the mainstream science journals have been blindly following a bandwagon. Chicxulub, which has been studied by gravity and magnetic surveys, has also had a number of oil wells drilled into it. The geology revealed by these borehole data totally rules out the idea that Chicxulub is an impact crater. There is obvious volcanism interspersed in the layers. There is no sign of any sort of impact melt sheet. An asteroid large enough to make such a crater would have blasted out all the upper Cretaceous sediments within the structure. They are still there, ergo, no impact."
And furthermore, even if it was caused by a meteorite or asteroid impact, the extinctions don't even correlate with the crater dates. Their own estimated dates for the supposed crater and supposed extinctions are separated by hundreds of thousands of years. And as far as a cooling effect this supposedly had on the world causing a global extinction, we know this isn't true either, because during the eruption of Krakatoa, it was documented that the average midsummer temperature in America dropped by about 7 degrees. However, this didn't spawn any global extinction. In fact, prior to Krakatoa there was another eruption that was 400 times larger than Krakatoa, and we likewise don't see any evidence of global extinction from that one either. No, I don't think so. And even if you go in the other end of the spectrum and say that this supposed asteroid impact caused a global firestorm, you still have a problem. It still doesn't fit the evidence. Again, why then did it kill off just the dinosaurs yet certain animals did survive, especially fire-sensitive ones like thin-skinned mammals or delicate birds? No, I don't think so. Try as they might, the evolutionist theory of an asteroid striking the Earth and killing off all the dinosaurs just doesn't fit the evidence. The second theory evolutionists say caused the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs is the Archaeopteryx theory. Believe it or not, due to the flaws of the previous theory and an obvious disdain for the biblical explanation for the sudden disappearance for the dinosaurs, that is, a worldwide flood, evolutionists have now come up with one of their latest theories as to why the dinosaurs suddenly disappeared. They actually say they turned into birds. Yes, that's right. You heard me correctly. Birds. Don't believe me? Listen to their own words.
In 1997, at the entrance to the bird exhibit at the zoo in Cincinnati, Ohio, we read the following on a sign: Dinosaurs went extinct millions of years ago, or did they? No, birds are essentially modern short-tailed feathered dinosaurs. Sadly, the secular media have become so blatant in their anti-Christian stand and pro-evolutionary propaganda that they are bold enough to make such ridiculous statements as, parrots and hummingbirds are also dinosaurs. University of Kansas paleontologist Larry Martin sums up the presentation of this dinosaur to bird fossils best: you have to put this into perspective. To the people who wrote this paper, linking dinosaurs to birds, the chicken would be a feathered dinosaur.
Say what? Parrots, hummingbirds, and even chickens are dinosaurs. You better watch out for those droppings. But seriously, as you can see, I'm not making this up. They would actually have you and I believe that birds are the descendants of dinosaurs, or in other words, that dinosaurs slowly evolved into the birds we see today and hence disappeared. And that sounds all neat and dandy, especially those with a high amount of imagination, but again, let's take a look at this theory and see if it really completely fits the evidence of the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs. First of all, if dinosaurs supposedly slowly evolved into birds, how does this explain their sudden disappearance? Furthermore, as one researcher pointed out,
in case you don't know, there are a few differences between a dinosaur and a bird. You don't just put a few feathers on him and say, "Let's go, man, come on, you can do it." It's not quite that easy, folks. You see, reptiles have four perfectly good legs, birds have two legs and two wings. So if his front legs are going to change into wings, besides lots of other things having to change, like the muscular system, the nervous system to control this, and the brain to control flight, besides all of that, somewhere along the line, his front legs are going to be half leg, half wing. Which means now he can't run, and he can't fly. This guy is going to have a problem evolving through that stage, don't you think? As a matter of fact, through all the stages he's going to have a problem evolving.
In other words, this supposed evolutionary creature of half dinosaur and half bird isn't going to be able to flee from predators, and hence will be eaten up lickety-split. And last time I checked, dead half dinosaur half bird creatures have no babies, and therefore no evolution. But that's not all. Evolutionists then try to point to supposed similarities between dinosaurs and birds and say this is proof of their supposed evolutionary ties. However, a quick examination of the facts shows why this is also a fantasy, as this man rightly points out.
They tell the kids, though, that birds are covered with feathers, which is true, and they are going to say, boys and girls, bird feathers evolved from the same scales that protected the dinosaurs so well. Hold on a second. Feathers are extremely complex. The only similarity they have between feathers and scales is they are both made from the same protein. It is called keratin. Your fingernails and your hair are made from the same stuff. That doesn't prove that they are related. It proves they've got a common designer. Did you know battleships and forks are both made out of the same metal? Iron. Does that prove that they both evolved from a tin can 27 million years ago? Similarity proves a common designer.
But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's tons of other problems with this idea that birds have evolved from dinosaurs. He continues.
There are real problems with the bird evolution from reptiles. The lungs are totally different. Reptiles have a sac-type lung. Birds have a tubular-type lung. Very different lung system. Modern birds are found in layers with and lower than the so-called dinosaurs. How can they be the ancestors? How can the dinosaurs change to birds? The birds were already there, even by their thinking, with their faulty geologic scale. scales and feathers attach to the body differently, and they come from different genes on the chromosome. Birds have a four-chambered heart. Reptiles have a three-chambered heart. Major change there, folks. How is that going to survive? In addition to just the heart changing, you have to get the nerve supply changing. And the DNA code changing so the next generation has this heart change. It doesn't work. Reptiles lay a leathery egg. Birds have a hard-shelled egg. There are thousands of differences between reptiles and birds.
But even when you point this out, the evolutionist goes on to say, well, maybe there are a few problems with this process of evolution from dinosaur to bird, but be that as it may, we've got proof that this really happened. We've found a half-bird, half-dinosaur fossil called Archaeopteryx. Really? Well, not so surprisingly, another quick look at the facts reveals another set of problems as this man shares.
They show the picture of Archaeopteryx and say, boys and girls, this is Archaeopteryx. Wow, big word, write that down. It will be on the test. Archaeopteryx. It means ancient wing. They are going to say, boys and girls, this used to be a dinosaur. This is the missing link. It's a bird, teacher. It's 12 inches long. Come on. It's the size of a pigeon. Only 6 have been found. Some people think they are all fakes. I don't know. Even if they are legitimate though, it's just a bird. It's 100% bird. The size of a crow. They are going to say, well, now, he's got claws on his wings. Do you see those claws right there? Don't you see? That proves he used to be a dinosaur. Come on now, teacher. 12 birds today have claws on their wings. The ostrich, the watsine, the turaco, the ibis. I can't name them all, but there are 12 birds that have claws on the wings right now. By the way, going from claws to no claws would be an example of losing something, not gaining something. Is that how evolution works? You lose everything until you have it all? I don't get it. Well, they are going to say, well, he's got teeth in his beak. See those teeth right there? That proves he used to be a dinosaur. Well, now, hold on just a minute, some birds have teeth, most don't. Some reptiles have teeth, some don't. Some fish have teeth, some don't. Some of you have teeth. Some don't. That doesn't prove you used to be a dinosaur. And again, going from teeth to no teeth is losing, not gaining. That's the opposite of what we need. That's propaganda. These experts know that there is no evidence for any changing. They say there is fossil evidence, and there isn't. There is no evidence. And the experts know that. W.E. Swinton from the British Museum of Natural History, the largest fossil collection in the world, said, "There is no fossil evidence of the stages through which the remarkable change from reptile to bird was achieved. But the textbooks tell the kids that there is."
In fact, even other evolutionists admit this as being pure fantasy. Alan Fiducia, an ornithologist at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, says,
"It's just a fantasy of theirs. They so much want to see living dinosaurs that now they think they can study them vicariously at the backyard bird feeder. Paleontologists have tried to turn Archaeopteryx into an earthbound, feathered dinosaur. But it's not. It is a bird, a perching bird. And no amount of paleobabble is going to change that."
Oh, but Archaeopteryx is just one of many evolutionary fantasy stories foisted upon us. Here's just a few more.
Time magazine on April 26, 1993, had a front page cover of a birdosaur, now called Mononychus, with feathers, a supposed transitional form between dinosaurs and birds, based on a fossil find that had no feathers. In the same month, Science News had an article suggesting this animal was a digging creature more like a mole. In 1996, newspapers reported a find in China of a reptile fossil that supposedly had feathers. Some of the media reports claimed that, if it were confirmed, it would be irrefutable evidence that today's birds evolved from dinosaurs. One scientist stated, "You can't come to any conclusion other than that they're feathers." However, in 1997, the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia sent 4 leading scientists to investigate this find. They concluded they were not feathers. The media report stated, concerning one of the scientists, he said he saw hair-like structures, not hairs, that could have supported a frill, or crest, like those on iguanas. No sooner had this report appeared, than another media report claimed that 20 fragments of bones of a reptile found in South America showed dinosaurs were related to birds. Birds are warm-blooded and reptiles are cold-blooded, but evolutionists who believe dinosaurs evolved into birds would like to see dinosaurs as warm-blooded to support their theory. But Dr. Larry Martin, of the University of Kansas, opposes this idea. Recent research has shown the microscopic structure of dinosaur bones was characteristic of cold-blooded animals, Martin said. So we're back to cold-blooded dinosaurs.
Sadly, the secular media have become so blatant in their anti-Christian stand and pro-evolutionary propaganda, that they are bold enough to make such ridiculous statements as, parrots and hummingbirds are also dinosaurs. Several new reports have fueled the bird-slash-dinosaur debate among evolutionists. One concerns research on the embryonic origins of the fingers of birds and dinosaurs, showing that birds could not have evolved from dinosaurs. A study of the so-called feathered dinosaur from China revealed that the dinosaur had a distinctively reptilian lung and diaphragm, which is distinctly different from the avian lung. Another report said that the frayed edges that some thought to be feathers on the Chinese fossil are similar to the collagen fibers found immediately beneath the skin of sea snakes. There is no credible evidence that dinosaurs evolved into birds. Dinosaurs have always been dinosaurs and birds have always been birds. So what do you do when your fantasy falls flat on its face? Well, apparently according to the evolutionists, you resort to flat-out fraud. Check it out for yourself.
A yet more sensational case of dinobird hype broke out in 1999. In its November 1999 issue, National Geographic published an article about a fossil specimen unearthed in China, which was claimed to bear both bird and dinosaur features. National Geographic writer Christopher P. Sloan, the author of the article, went so far as to claim, "We can now say that birds are theropods just as confidently as we say that humans are mammals." This species, which was said to have lived 125 million years ago, was immediately given the scientific name Archaeoraptor leoningensis. However, the fossil was a fake and was skillfully constructed from five separate specimens. A group of researchers, among whom were also three paleontologists, proved the forgery 1 year later with the help of X-ray computed tomography. The dino bird was actually the product of a Chinese evolutionist. Chinese amateurs formed the dino bird by using glue and cement from 88 bones and stones. Research suggests that Archaeoraptor was built from the front part of the skeleton of an ancient bird, and that its body and tail included bones from four different specimens. The interesting thing is that National Geographic published a high-profile article about such a crude forgery and, moreover, used it as the basis for claiming that bird evolution scenarios had been verified without expressing any doubts or caution in the article at all. Dr. Storrs Olson, of the famous Smithsonian Institute Natural History Museum in the USA, later said that he warned National Geographic beforehand that this fossil was a fake, but that the magazine management totally ignored him. According to Olson, National Geographic has reached an all-time low for engaging in sensationalistic, unsubstantiated, tabloid journalism. He later stated, "The hype about feathered dinosaurs in the exhibit currently on display at the National Geographic Society is even worse, and makes the spurious claim that there is strong evidence that a wide variety of carnivorous dinosaurs had feathers. A model of the undisputed dinosaur Deinonychus and illustrations of baby tyrannosaurs are shown clad in feathers, all of which is simply imaginary and has no place outside of science fiction."
This revealing case demonstrates two important facts. First, there are people who have no qualms about resorting to forgery in an effort to find evidence for the theory of evolution. Second, some highly reputable popular science journals, which have assumed the mission of imposing the theory of evolution on people, are perfectly willing to disregard any facts that may be inconvenient or have alternative interpretations. That is, they have become little more than propaganda tools for propagating the theory of evolution. They take not a scientific, but a dogmatic, stance and knowingly compromise science to defend the theory of evolution to which they are so strongly devoted. In fact, the desire to supposedly prove this bird-to-dinosaur fantasy has gotten so bad that Dr. Martin also freely admitted, "The whole commercial market for fossils has gotten riddled with fakery." No, I don't think so. Try as they might, the evolutionist theory of dinosaurs supposedly turning into birds to explain their sudden disappearance just doesn't fit the evidence. In fact, it seems to be full of lies. The third theory evolutionists say caused the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs is what I call the anything-goes theory. Now you would think that after the two previous theories with not only their faults but their flat-out lies that the evolutionists would finally admit defeat and concede that the biblical account of a worldwide flood is the best explanation that fits the evidence for the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs. Unfortunately, rather than admit defeat, they seem to keep coming up with just about any lame-ole excuse for why dinosaurs suddenly disappeared. Here are just a few of them.
The sun became either too hot or too cold for dinosaurs. The world's climate became either too dry or too wet. A supernova exploded nearby, spraying the Earth with radiation. Earth's magnetic field reversed, and incoming radiation killed most life. A passing comet poisoned the Earth with chemicals.
However, if any one of these supposed global events were true, again as we saw with the asteroid theory, why did it only destroy all the dinosaurs and yet not destroy all of life? Why did some life survive that would have the same problem with these effects as the dinosaurs would? It just doesn't make sense. Oh, but don't worry. It gets even more senseless. Here's some more whacked out theories.
Mammals ate the dinosaur eggs. New narcotic plants evolved. Say what? Drugs killed them? Niels Rattenborg of the Max Planck Institute for Ornithology in Germany says it was the inability of dinosaurs to experience slow-wave sleep that may have been one of the reasons why they became extinct. They were killed by volcanoes. Poisonous gases. Mass suicide. Constipation. Parasites. Slipped discs. Shrinking brain and greater stupidity.
Speaking of a shrinking of the brain, one man observing these theories rightly stated, "It is obvious that evolutionists don't know what happened, and are grasping at straws." And apparently, at least some of the evolutionists are honest enough to admit it.
Noted dinosaur authority Edwin Colbert wrote, "The Great Extinction was an event that has defied all attempts at a satisfactory explanation." J.M. Good, T.E. White, and G.F. Stucker wrote, "These are some of the theories that have been advanced to explain the sudden extinction of dinosaurs throughout the world. Each theory will explain the death of some dinosaurs in some places, but attempts to apply any of them, or combinations of them, to worldwide extinction have failed. This dinosaur story is like a mystery thriller with the last pages torn out." That is true, and the paleontologist knows it. He also knows the riddle will probably never be solved.
Or will it? As we are about to see, one such explanation does fit the evidence. In fact, it's been sitting under our noses the whole time. What caused a sudden global disappearance of the dinosaurs? Can you say a sudden global worldwide flood? Gee, where have I heard that before? As we saw in great detail in the last study on A Judged Creation, it was quite obvious that there really was a worldwide flood and really not only destroyed the whole human race, save eight, Noah and his family, but it also destroyed the whole world of air-breathing land animals, which obviously would include the dinosaurs. It's so funny, and yet given the dishonest track record of many evolutionists, not so strange that they completely and vehemently ignore the obvious evidence of what really caused the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs. The one mass global event that clearly fits the evidence of the mass extinction of dinosaurs is the massive worldwide flood mentioned in the Bible. As one researcher stated,
"If you remove the evolutionary framework, get rid of the millions of years, and then take the Bible seriously, you will find an explanation that fits the facts and makes perfect sense. At the time of the flood, many of the sea creatures died, but some survived. In addition, all of the land creatures outside the ark died, but the representatives of all the kinds that survived on the ark lived in the new world after the flood. This was the greatest disaster in history. Nothing else has even come close. Such a great event would surely have left evidence to be found today. For instance, one would expect to find billions of dead creatures buried by water in mud and sand now hardened to rock. And that is exactly what scientists do find around the world."
And speaking of dead things, specifically dinosaurs, the first way we know that a worldwide flood really did cause their demise is from dinosaur twisting. This was one of the interesting evidences we saw in the previous study on A Judged Creation. If you'll recall, we talked about the worldwide occurrence of what is called dinosaur graveyards. Let's briefly revisit a little bit of what we discovered. Dinosaur graveyards not only contain tons of fossils, as opposed to ones scattered here and there, but they find them all jumbled up and thrown together in a disorderly mass, which is exactly what you would expect to find if there was a worldwide flood like the Bible states. This is because of two things. One, because since animals like to travel in packs or herds, when a sudden wave overtook them, not just one, but a whole mess of animals would be preserved in mud. But they wouldn't necessarily be preserved all nice and neat lying in flat orderly rows in an orderly manner. Rather, the swiftness and violence of the waves would have left them in a twisted, contorted, swirling mass, if you will. Also, to make things even more messy, some of the animals would have quickly buried while others would have floated. Those that floated would eventually rot. As they rotted, they'd start to fall apart with various limbs dropping off. So now, you have a swirling mass of animals and pieces of animals floating in the water, but eventually when the waters receded, this mass of tangled up carcasses and carcass parts would also be encased in mud. So either scenario shows us that if there really was a worldwide flood, we should find a whole mess of bones, including dinosaur bones, all over the world in a mixed up mess. And that's precisely what we find. One researcher states.
At this spot, in Wyoming, the fossil hunters found a hillside literally covered with large fragments of dinosaur bones. In short, it was a veritable mine of dinosaur bones. The concentration of the fossils was remarkable, they were piled in like logs in a jam.
Wow. Logs in a jam is what you'd expect to find in a biblical flood. In fact, there are so many animals jam-packed in these graveyards that they're oftentimes 2 to 3 miles thick of bones. Which explains why hordes of large animals are entombed in a thick rock layer, such as the dinosaurs preserved along the Red Deer River in Alberta, Canada, and why dinosaur bones have been excavated by the tons in the fossil graveyards found in Vernal, Utah. In fact, in one site alone, the Karo Beds in Africa, there are an estimated 800 billion remains, and even after decades of fossil collecting, bones are still sticking out of the ground and stretch for hundreds of miles. Also, just like you'd expect to find if there really was a worldwide flood, these bones are all jumbled up with not just one kind of animal but various kinds of animals, including various pieces of various animals. Pictures of these dinosaur graveyards often show people chiseling out a backbone or something of an animal that has no legs, head, tail, or rib cage attached to it with no teeth marks on the bone, and next to it is another backbone of another animal all bent and twisted. This shows us that these animals weren't torn apart by scavengers. Rather, this is a case of animals rotting apart, as mentioned above, during the flood. Or as one person states.
We have huge, mass graves where dinosaur fossils are jumbled together like so much flotsam after a flood.
Gee, I wonder which flood that was? And just like you'd expect to find in a worldwide flood, these dinosaurs' graveyards are also worldwide. There's the Morrison Beds in North America, the Dinosaur Beds in Montana, in the Rocky Mountains, in Alberta, the Dakotas, China, Colorado, Utah, Africa, etc., etc., all of which contain millions of dinosaur fossils all piled together in tremendous heaps. And not so surprisingly, just as we saw with the evidence in the previous study on how man and dinosaurs really did coexist like the Bible says, we even find human remains mixed in with these tremendous heaps as this article shares.
One of the most fascinating fossil graveyard of all is located in the southern United States. The Ashley Beds is an enormous phosphate graveyard that contains mixed remains of man with land and sea animals, notably dinosaurs, plesiosaurs, whales, sharks, rhinos, horses, mastodons, mammoths, porpoises, elephants, deer, pigs, dogs, and sheep. This catalog of fossils from the phosphate beds was given in the records of Major Edward Willis, who displayed them at multiple expositions. Professor F.S. Holmes, paleontologist and curator of the College of Charleston's Natural History Museum, described the fossil graveyard in a report to the Academy of Natural Sciences. Remains of the hog, the horse, and other animals of recent date, together with human bones mingled with the bones of the mastodon and extinct gigantic lizards. There can be little doubt what extinct gigantic lizard he referenced, for he pictured a hadrosaurus on the front of his 1870 book The Phosphate Rocks of South Carolina and captioned it, "Skeleton of a Fossil Lizard 18 Feet in Length."
Folks, if I didn't know better, I'd say a biblical flood that covered the whole world is the only reasonable explanation to fully explain all the twisted up dinosaur graveyards we find all over the world. That is, if you're honest with the facts. And gee, maybe that's why paleontologist Edwin Colbert admitted.
As the layer, cut out of a New Mexico hillside, was exposed, it revealed the most remarkable dinosaurian graveyard, in which there were literally scores of skeletons, one on top of another and interlaced with one another. It would appear that some catastrophe had overtaken these dinosaurs, so that they all died together and were buried together.
I wonder what catastrophe that was. The second way we know that a worldwide flood really did cause the demise of the dinosaurs is from dinosaur tendering. You see, we not only know that a worldwide flood caused the sudden disappearance of the dinosaurs from all the twisted up dinosaur graveyards around the world, but just like you'd expect to find if the dinosaurs really were created by God alongside man just a few thousand years ago, we also find the remains of dinosaurs in a state that are still tender. Or in other words, in an amazing young and fresh state, which is yet another nail in the coffin for the supposed belief that dinosaurs are millions of years old. And the first evidence we find of dinosaurs being in a young and tender state, just like you'd expect to find if they were destroyed in a recent worldwide flood, is from fresh bones. You see, thanks to the brainwashing of evolution that's bombarded into people's brains from the mass media and mass education, people not only falsely assume that dinosaurs prove evolution when they do not, as we have seen, but they also falsely assume that dinosaurs must be millions of years old. And this is because if you open up just about any kid's book in preschool forward about dinosaurs, you'll see that the very first page says something like, millions of years ago, right? Then they get into first grade and the books there on dinosaurs say, millions of years ago, and then the second grade books say the same thing and the third grade books say the same thing, and on it goes into the university, and into the cartoons and movies, etc. You can't escape it. People all over the world assume that dinosaurs, including their bones, must be millions of years old. First of all, as we saw in the earlier study A Young Creation, it doesn't take millions of years for something to fossilize. It can happen very rapidly with the right conditions, like the conditions presented in a worldwide flood. So even if we did find dinosaur bones completely fossilized, that still doesn't prove it happened millions of years ago. However, what makes it even harder for the evolutionary idea for dinosaurs, along with their bones, being millions of years old, is that's not what we find. Rather, we find dinosaur bones very young, fresh, well-preserved state, exactly what you'd expect to find if they were destroyed in a recent worldwide flood. Here's just a few examples.
In 1961, a petroleum geologist discovered a large, half-meter-thick bone bed. The bones were fresh, not fossilized. In fact, they looked and felt like old cow bones, and so he assumed that these were recent bison bones. Therefore, discovery of this site was not reported for 20 years because it was assumed they were bison, not dinosaur, bones. Later, when the site was investigated, these fresh bones were identified as belonging to horned dinosaurs, duck-billed dinosaurs, and other small dinosaurs. In 1987, a young Inuit, Canadian Eskimo, working with scientists from Memorial University, Newfoundland, Canada, on Bylot Island, found an unfossilized bone, which was identified as part of a lower jaw of a duck-billed dinosaur. Recently, fresh dinosaur bones have been excavated from the banks of Alaska's Colville River west of Prudder Bay.
They are as light as balsa wood and look as fresh as yesterday's dog bones, says Canadian paleontologist Phil Curry.
The remains of the vegetarian duck-billed dinosaurs and other creatures lay buried in the now frozen tundra, which was once a coastal swamp with a subtropical to temperate climate. Their structure was porous and the fossils were not remineralized.
The lady guide was highly skeptical. This guide, who moments before had been discussing animal ecology and evolution, found when confronted with news of the new discovery, that she simply could not believe it.
She could not accept that fresh unfossilized dinosaur bones had been found in Alaska.
Such bones could never have lasted 70 million years, she said. One thing is certain, they were not preserved by cold.
Everyone recognizes that the climate in these regions was much warmer during the time when the dinosaurs lived. Many dinosaur remains are still not completely turned into rock.
More than half of the fossil is still original bone, not stone.
Some even have chemicals from the living animals, proteins and amino acids.
Some fish fossils still have a fishy smell when first uncovered.
Some of the plants buried during the flood are not fossilized either. In New Jersey, large amounts of wood from trees that were growing at the same time as dinosaurs can be found in the dirt.
They are preserved, but not turned to stone at all.
In England, fragile plant hairs and tiny details of the plant's cells can be seen.
The plants are not turned into rock. They are just flattened and blackened.
Since the flood happened only about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, these types of discoveries are not surprising. Similar perplexing questions can be asked about the frozen forest found on Axel Heiberg Island in the Canadian Arctic, less than 1,200 kilometers from the North Pole. Geologists claim that these forest remains are about 45 million years old. Nevertheless, the wood and leaf debris are astonishingly well preserved.
The plant material is not petrified. the logs are still wood which can be sawn and burnt. The leaf debris and cones include some specimens recognizable as dawn redwood. These recent developments are certainly food for thought. It is undeniable that fresh dinosaur bones have been found.
And apparently, this is why one researcher rightly concluded.
Where bones have not been protected by permineralization, they are sometimes found in a condition which to all intents and purpose looks as if they are at most centuries, not millions of years old. The Bible's account of the true history of the world makes it clear that no fossil can be more than a few thousand years old. Dinosaur bones give evidence strongly consistent with this. This is a stunning revelation. Evolutionists are convinced that all dinosaur bones must be at least 65 million years old. Those who take Genesis as real history would predict that no dinosaur bone is more than a few thousand years old. So the existence of such totally unmineralized dinosaur bones that have not disintegrated is perfectly consistent with our expectations. The obvious conclusion is that these bones were deposited in relatively recent times. These bone beds are stunning evidence that the time of the dinosaurs was not millions of years ago, but perhaps only thousands. It is time geologists recognized the implications of their own data.
The second evidence we find of dinosaurs being in a young and tender state, just like you'd expect to find if they were destroyed in a recent worldwide flood, is from fresh blood. Here's what this article revealed.
Have blood cells ever been found in dinosaur fossils?
It sounds preposterous to those who believe that these dinosaur remains are at least 65 million years old. Actual red blood cells in fossil bones from a Tyrannosaurus rex? With traces of the blood protein hemoglobin, which makes blood red and carries oxygen. It is of course much less of a surprise to those who believe Genesis, in which case dinosaur remains are at most only a few thousand years old. In a recent article, scientists from Montana State University, seemingly struggling to allow professional caution to restrain their obvious excitement at the findings, report on the evidence which seems to strongly suggest that traces of real blood from a T-Rex have actually been found. The story starts with a beautifully preserved T-Rex skeleton unearthed in the United States in 1990. When the bones were brought to the Montana State University's lab, it was noticed that some parts deep inside the long bone of the leg had not completely fossilized. To find unfossilized dinosaur bone is already an indication more consistent with a young age for the fossils. Let Mary Schweitzer, the scientist most involved with this find, share how her co-workers took turns looking through a microscope at a thin section of this T-Rex bone, complete with blood vessel channels.
The lab filled with murmurs of amazement, for I had focused on something inside the vessels that none of us had ever noticed before, tiny round objects, translucent red with a dark center.
Then a colleague took one look at them and shouted, "You've got red blood cells.
You've got red blood cells."
Schweitzer personally commented, "Round and tiny and nucleated, they were threaded through the bone like red blood cells in blood vessels. But blood cells in a dinosaur bone should have disappeared eons ago."
I got goosebumps. It was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. But, of course, I couldn't believe it.
The bones are, after all, 65 million years old.
How could blood cells survive that long?
Schweitzer confronted her boss, famous paleontologist dinosaur Jack Horner, with her doubts about how these could really be blood cells. Horner suggested she try to prove they were not red blood cells, and she says, "So far, we haven't been able to." The evidence that hemoglobin has indeed survived in this dinosaur bone, which casts immense doubt upon the millions of years idea, is, to date, as follows. The tissue was colored reddish-brown, the color of hemoglobin, as was liquid extracted from the dinosaur tissue. Hemoglobin contains heme units. Chemical signatures unique to heme were found in the specimens when certain wavelengths of laser light were applied. Because it contains iron, heme reacts to magnetic fields differently from other proteins. Extracts from this specimen reacted in the same way as modern heme compounds. To ensure that the samples had not been contaminated with certain bacteria which have heme, but never the protein hemoglobin, extracts of the dinosaur fossil were injected over several weeks into rats. If there was even a minute amount of hemoglobin present in the T-Rex sample, the rat's immune system should build up detectable antibodies against this compound.
This is exactly what happened in carefully controlled experiments.
Evidence of hemoglobin, and the still recognizable shapes of red blood cells, in unfossilized dinosaur bone is powerful testimony against the whole idea of dinosaurs living millions of years ago. How could these cells last for 65 million years?
This discovery speaks volumes for the Bible's account of a recent creation.
And it also speaks of a cover-up like this researcher stated.
The existence of 65 million-year-old DNA is biochemically unthinkable. In other words, the old Earth evolutionary tale is clearly at odds with the fresh dinosaur bone evidence. How embarrassing to the academic establishment. This may be why ongoing dinosaur soft tissue discoveries are generally not broadcast through popular media channels.
Gee, I wonder why? The third evidence we find of dinosaurs being in a young and tender state, just like you'd expect to find if they were destroyed in a recent worldwide flood, is from fresh bodies. Believe it or not, we not only find fresh bones and fresh blood of dinosaurs, which perfectly correlate to the biblical account of dinosaurs, but we even find fresh body parts. Can you say, evolution eat your heart out? Dinosaur heart, that is. Here's what one article shares.
Medical X-ray scans reveal the structure of a fossilized dinosaur's heart. News is breaking across the world of a sensational dinosaur discovery. The fossilized interior of a Thescelosaurus, a plant-eating dinosaur about 13 feet long including the tail, was subjected to medical X-ray scans, and it appears to show very clearly the structure of a four-chambered heart. If so, this is fascinating for a number of reasons. It confirms very rapid fossilization, not slow and gradual over long time spans. The heart is a soft tissue, which after death will be very rapidly attacked by microbes and other decay processes. It is not conceivable that the structure of the chambers of a heart will last in any recognizable form for more than a few weeks at the absolute outset, unless they are subject to rapid preservation. If it turns out that the tissue has been preserved by permineralization, then this is further evidence that permineralization, i.e. being infiltrated with mineral solutions that then harden, does not take long time periods. After this discovery, other relatively intact dinosaur fossils will doubtless be scanned in similar ways, so it will be interesting to see what further design features will be found. If indeed this evidence is what it is claimed to be, the existence of such anatomical detail in a fossil creature alleged to have died 66 million years ago is much more consistent with rapid burial of the animal in a huge catastrophic flood than the usual slow and gradual, long-age scenario of evolution.
Oh, but we not only find fresh dinosaur hearts, we even find fresh dinosaur tissue that's so fresh that it's still soft and stretchy. Check it out for yourself.
Recent dinosaur soft tissue find is a stunning rebuttal of millions of years. We previously announced the discovery of red blood cells in dinosaur bone. Now a further announcement, involving the same scientist, Montana State University's Dr. Mary Schweitzer, stretches, pun intentional, the long-age paradigm beyond belief. Not only have more blood cells been found, but also soft, fibrous tissue, and complete blood vessels. The fact that this really is unfossilized soft tissue from a dinosaur is in this instance so obvious to the naked eye that any skepticism directed at the previous discovery is completely history. One description of a portion of the tissue was that it is flexible and resilient, and when stretched returns to its original shape. The exciting discovery was apparently made when researchers were forced to break open the leg bone of a Tyrannosaurus rex fossil in order to lift it by helicopter. It turned out that bone was still largely hollow and not filled up with minerals as is usual. Dr. Schweitzer used chemicals to dissolve the bony matrix, revealing the soft tissue still present. Note, if the bone wasn't broken, they would have never known. She has been cited as saying that the blood vessels were flexible, and that in some instances, one could squeeze out their contents. Furthermore, she said, the microstructures that look like cells are preserved in every way. She also is reported as commenting that preservation of this extent, where you still have this flexibility and transparency, has never been seen in a dinosaur before. It appears that this sort of thing has not been found before mainly because it was never looked for. Schweitzer was probably alert to the possibility because of her previous serendipitous discovery of T. rex blood cells. It appears that the fossils were sent to her to look for soft tissues prior to preservative being applied because of her known interest. In fact, Schweitzer has since found similar soft tissue in several other dinosaur specimens. The reason that this possibility has long been overlooked seems obvious, the overriding belief in millions of years. The long age paradigm, dominant belief system, blinded researchers to the possibility, as it were. It is inconceivable that such things should be preserved for, in this case, 70 million years. So will this new evidence cause anyone to stand up and say there's something funny about the emperor's clothes? Not likely. Instead, it will almost certainly become an accepted phenomenon that even stretchy, soft tissues must be somehow capable of surviving for millions of years. Because, after all, we know that this specimen is 70 million years old. See how it works. Schweitzer's mentor, the famous dinosaur Jack Horner, upon whom Sam Neill's lead character in the Jurassic Park movies was modeled, is already urging museums to consider cracking open some of the bones in their existing dinosaur fossils in the hope of finding more such squishosaurus remains. He is excited about the potential to learn more about dinosaurs, of course. But nothing about questioning the millions of years psi. I invite the reader to step back and contemplate the obvious. This discovery gives immensely powerful support to the proposition that dinosaur fossils are not millions of years old at all, but were mostly fossilized under catastrophic conditions a few thousand years ago at most.
The third way we know that a worldwide flood really did cause the demise of the dinosaurs is from dinosaur tracking. You see, finding twisted-up dinosaur remains and tender dinosaur remains aren't the only proof that dinosaurs were recently destroyed by a recent worldwide flood, like the Bible states. Believe it or not, there's even more proof. It's almost like God's being gracious to us. We even find a very strange pattern with their tracks. By the looks of them, researchers have noted that it's almost like they were trying to run away from something. I wonder what that was? Can you say a worldwide flood? Here's what they discovered.
Millions of dinosaur tracks have been discovered in sedimentary rocks all over the world. Evolutionists have naturally interpreted these tracks within their belief system, assuming they represent normal animal behavior some 100 million years ago. On the other hand, the Bible makes it clear that all dinosaurs living at the time, except those on the ark, perished in Noah's flood. At first glance, it seems difficult to explain the formation of dinosaur tracks during the flood. A closer inspection of the details, however, demonstrates that the flood is a more reasonable explanation. First, individual trackways, defined as more than one track from the same dinosaur, are, all over the world, almost always straight. Normal animal behavior should often involve meandering tracks, as readily observed by animals making tracks in the snow. Straight trackways indicate that the animals were fearful, as if fleeing from a catastrophe. Researchers recently found 40 straight, parallel trackways of two types of large plant-eating dinosaurs in southern England. The trackway of another large supposed meat-eating dinosaur was also discovered nearby, going in the same direction. These trackways provoked a predator-prey interpretation by the evolutionists. But the tracks could just as easily, if not better, be interpreted as different types of dinosaurs, all fleeing the same event in the same direction. There are few, if any, baby or young juvenile tracks associated with older juvenile and adult dinosaur tracks. A normal assemblage of tracks should include abundant baby or young juvenile tracks. For instance, 50% of the elephant tracks in Amboseli National Park, Africa, were made by babies or young juveniles. Since immature dinosaur tracks are rare, the trackways were probably formed during unusual conditions, rather than by normal animal activity. In the flood, babies and young juveniles would likely have been left behind, as those more able to flee the approaching floodwaters hastened away.
You know, folks, if I didn't know better, I'd say we really do see evidence of how the dinosaurs were really destroyed by the flood. How about you? It's almost like the Bible had it right all along. Go figure. And so here's the point. I'd say it's not only pretty clear that a worldwide flood destroyed the dinosaurs, but I'd also say somebody's doing a masterful job of trying to cover the whole thing up, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I wonder why? Could it be that people would not only find out that dinosaurs came from the actual hand of God, but they would see they were also used to teach us to have a healthy fear of God, so we would get right with Him before it was too late. You know, folks, if I didn't know better, I'd say somebody's trying to keep people from the truth, you know what I'm saying? Gee, I wonder who that might be? People, please, don't miss the real purpose of dinosaurs. They weren't just big and fearful and came from the hand of God, they exist to teach us to have a healthy fear of God. Why? Because one day, people, you're going to stand before God and you're going to be judged by God, and He alone has the power to take you to heaven or throw you straight into hell. Hello. That's something to be fearful of. But that's right, if you don't want to take my word for it, then please, I beg you, listen to God's.
Jeremiah 26:19. Did not Hezekiah fear the Lord and seek his favor? And did not the Lord relent, so that he did not bring the disaster he pronounced against them?
O people, I beg you, please learn from the example of Hezekiah. Because he feared the Lord and sought his favor, what happened? God spared him from certain disaster. And so I ask you, what's it going to take for you two to stop being arrogant towards God and instead humble yourself before God and get saved through Jesus Christ, before it's too late? As you saw in this study, God is being gracious to us. He's given us the clear evidence that a worldwide flood really did destroy the dinosaurs to show us that we can not only trust the Word of God, but that we need to have a healthy fear of God. Why? Because one day, people, when you least expect it, your life is going to be over. It's just one heartbeat away. And when that happens, you're going to be standing before Almighty God. And the Bible is clear. If on earth you had repented of your sins and asked Jesus Christ to forgive you, then you will go straight into heaven. But if you did not repent of your sins and you arrogantly mocked him, you will go straight into hell. And so I beg you, please, please, won't you turn from your wicked ways? Won't you get right with God? Won't you escape the eternal judgment to come? People, please, this is not a game. All eternity is on the line and time is running out. Your death is going to be here before you know it, but by then it'll be too late. Please, cry out to God now. Humble yourself and ask Jesus to forgive you of your sins before it's too late.